Good afternoon. As you know, we're going through, starting in the book of Devarim. That is the book of Deuteronomy. That's the real name of it because it says Devarim or HaDevarim. And so it's kind of interesting. We talk about Devarim. You know what Devarim means, don't you? Words. Words. This particular case is the words of Moses. So we're going to learn a little bit more about Moses. Now, the big thing that I want to go through, since I will not be here next week, the first chapter, second chapter, and third chapter gives an overall summary of what is taking place. And so Moses is telling them and talking to them about some of the adventures that they have done. These are pretty long chapters. And I think that if we have a good reader, can he possibly read all three chapters, chapter 1, 2, and 3? Because basically it's already a historical background that's kind of enough to go back. And I will go through some of the things that were said. So just follow through with the story for right now. And then we will discuss some of the things that were talked about here by Moses. Deuteronomy chapter 1, 2, and 3. They're very long, but there's not much to be said in it except a repetition of many of the things that took place already in the book of Numbers.
Which Moses spoke to all Israel on the side of the Jordan in the wilderness, in the plain opposite Suf, between Paran, Tophel, Laban, Hazeroth, and Dizahab. It is 11 days' journey from Horeb by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. Now it came to pass in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that the Lord had given him as commandments to them. After he had killed Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, who dwelt at Ashtaroth in Edrei, on this side of the Jordan, in the land of Moab, Moses began to explain this law, saying, The Lord our God spoke to us in Horeb, saying, You have dwelt long enough at this mountain. Turn and take your journey, and go to the mountains of the Amorites, to all the neighboring places in the plain, in the mountains and in the lowland, in the south and on the sea coast, to the land of the Canaanites and to Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. See, I have set the land before you. Go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give to them and their descendants after them. And I spoke to you at that time, saying, I alone am not able to bear you. The Lord your God has multiplied you, and here you are today as the stars of heaven in multitude. May the Lord God of your fathers make you 1,000 times more numerous than you are, and bless you as he has promised you. How can I alone bear your problems and your burdens and your complaints? Choose wise, understanding, and knowledgeable men from among your tribes, and I will make them heads over you. And you answered me and said, The thing which you have told us is to do is good. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise and knowledgeable men, and made them heads over you, leaders of thousands, leaders of hundreds, leaders of fifties, leaders of tens, and officers for your tribes. Then I commanded your judges at the time, saying, Hear the cases between your brethren, and judge righteously between a man and his brother or the stranger who is with him. You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small as well as the great. You shall not be afraid in any man's presence, for the judgment is God's. The case that is too hard for you, bring to me, and I will hear it. And I commanded you at that time all the things which you should do. So we departed from Horeb, and went through all the great and terrible wilderness which you saw on the way to the mountains of the Amorites, as the Lord our God had commanded us. Then we came to Kadesh Barnea. And I said to you, You have come to the mountains of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is giving us. Look, the Lord your God has set the land before you. Go up and possess it. As the Lord God of your fathers has spoken to you, do not fear or be discouraged. And every one of you came near to me and said, Let us send men before us, and let them search out the land for us, and bring back word to us of the way by which we should go up, and of the cities into which we shall come. The plan pleased me well, so I took 12 of your men, one man from each tribe. And they departed and went up into the mountains and came to the valley of Eshcol and spied it out. They also took some of the fruit of the land in their hands and brought it down to us. And they brought back word to us, saying, It is a good land which the Lord our God is giving us. Nevertheless, you would not go up, but rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. And you complained in your tents and said, Because the Lord hates us, he has brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying, The people are greater and taller than we. The cities are great and fortified up to heaven. Moreover, we have seen the sons of the Anakim there. Then I said to you, Do not be terrified or afraid of them. The Lord your God who goes before you, he will fight for you, according to all he did for you in Egypt before your eyes, and in the wilderness where you saw how the Lord your God carried you, as a man carries his son, in all the way that you went until you came to this place. Yet, for all that, you did not believe the Lord your God, who went in the way before you to search out a place for you to pitch your tents, to show you the way you should go, in the fire by night and in the cloud by day. And the Lord heard the sound of your words, and was angry, and took an oath, saying, Surely not one of these men of this evil generation shall see that good land of which I swore to give to your fathers, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh, he shall see it, and to him and his children I am giving the land on which he walked, because he wholly followed the Lord. The Lord was also angry with me for your sake, saying, Even you shall not go in there. Joshua the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall go in there. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. Moreover, your little ones and your children, whose you say will be victims, who today have no knowledge of good and evil, they shall go in there. To them I will give it, and they shall possess it. But as for you, turn and take your journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. Then you answered and said to me, We have sinned against the Lord. We will go up and fight, just as the Lord our God commanded us. And when every one of you had girded on his weapons of war, you were ready to go up into the mountain. And the Lord said to me, Tell them, Do not go up nor fight, for I am not among you, lest you be defeated before your enemies. So I spoke to you, yet you would not listen, but rebelled against the command of the Lord, and presumptuously went up into the mountain. And the Amorites who dwelt in that mountain came out against you and chased you as bees do and drove you back from Seir to Hormah. Then you returned and wept before the Lord, but the Lord would not listen to your voice nor give ear to you. So you remained in Kadesh many days according to the days that you spent there. Then we turned and journeyed into the wilderness of the way of the Red Sea, as the Lord spoke to me, and skirted Mount Seir for many days. And the Lord spoke to me, saying, You have skirted this mountain long enough, turn northward. And commanded the people, saying, You are about to pass through the territory of your brethren, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. Therefore watch yourselves carefully. Do not meddle with them, for I will not give you any of their land. No, not so much as one footstep, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession. You shall buy food from them with money, that you may eat, and you shall also buy water from them with money, that you may drink. For the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hand. He knows your trudging through the great wilderness. These 40 years the Lord your God has been with you. You have lacked nothing. And when we passed beyond our brethren, the descendants of Esau, who dwell in Seir, away from the road of the plain, away from Elath and Ezion-Geber, we turned and passed by way of the wilderness of Moab. Then the Lord said to me, Do not harass Moab, nor contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot as a possession. The Emim had dwelt there in times past, a people as great and numerous and tall as the Anakim. But they also regarded as giants like the Anakim. But the Moabites call them Amim. The Horites formerly dwelt in Seir, but the descendants of Esau dispossessed them and destroyed them from before them, and dwelt in their place just as Israel did to the land of their possession which the Lord gave them. Now rise and cross over the valley of Zered. So we crossed over the valley of the Zered. And the time we took to come from Kadesh Barnea until we crossed over the valley of Zered was 38 years, until all the generation of the men of war was consumed from the midst of the camp, just as the Lord had sworn to them. For indeed the hand of the Lord was against them, to destroy them from the midst of the camp until they were consumed. So it was, when all the men of war had finally perished from among the people, that the Lord spoke to me, saying, This day you are to cross over at Ar, the boundary of Moab, and when you come near the people of Ammon, do not harass them or meddle with them, for I will not give you any of the land of the people of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the descendants of Lot as a possession. That was also regarded as a land of giants. Giants formerly dwelt there, but the Ammonites called them Zamzumim, a people as great and numerous and tall as the Anakim. But the Lord destroyed them before them, and they dispossessed them and dwelt in their place, just as he had done for the descendants of Esau, who dwelt in Seir. When he destroyed the Horites from before them, they dispossessed them and dwelt in their place, even to this day. And the Evim, who dwelt in villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphtorim, who came from Kaphtor, destroyed them and dwelt in their place. Rise, take your journey, and cross over the river Arnon. Look, I have given into your hand Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. Begin to possess it, and engage him in battle. This day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you upon the nations under the whole heaven, who shall hear the report of you, and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you. And I sent messengers from the wilderness of Kedemoth to Sihon king of Heshbon, with words of peace, saying, Let me pass through your land. I will keep strictly to the road. I will turn neither to the right nor to the left. You shall sell me food for money, that I may eat, and give me water for money, that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot. Just as the descendants of Esau, who dwell in Seir, and the Moabites, who dwell in Ar, did for me, until I crossed the Jordan to the land which the Lord our God is giving us. But Sihon, king of Heshbon, would not let us pass through. The Lord your God hardened his spirit, and made his heart obstinate, that he might deliver him into your hand, as it is this day. And the Lord said to me, See, I have begun to give Sihon and his land over to you. Begin to possess it, that you may inherit his land. Then Sihon and all his people came out against us to fight at Jahaz, and the Lord our God delivered him over to us. So we defeated him, his sons, and all his people. We took all the cities at that time, and were utterly destroyed. We utterly destroyed the men, women, and little ones of every city. We let none remaining. We took only the livestock as plunder for ourselves, with the spoil of the cities which we took. From Aroer, which is on the bank of the river Arnon, and from the city that is in the ravine as far as Gilead, there was not one city too strong for us. The Lord our God delivered all to us. Only you did not go near the land of the people of Ammon, anywhere along the river Jabbok, or to the cities of the mountains, or wherever the Lord our God had forbidden us. Then we turned and went up the road to Bashan, and Og king of Bashan came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And the Lord said to me, Do not fear him, for I have delivered him and all his people and his land into your hand. You shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon. So the Lord our God also delivered into our hands Og, king of Bashan, with all his people, and we attacked him until he had no survivors remaining. And we took all the cities at that time, and there was not a city which we did not take from them, 60 cities, all the regions of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan. All these cities were fortified with high walls, gates, and bars, besides a great many rural towns. And we utterly destroyed them, as we did to Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city. But all the livestock and the spoil of the cities we took as booty for ourselves, and at that time we took the land from the hand of the two kings of Amorites who were on this side of the Jordan, from the river Arnon to Mount Hermon. The Sidonians call Hermon Sirion, and the Amorites call it Senir. All the cities of the plain of Gilead, and all Bashan, as far as Salca and Adrii, cities of the kingdom of Og in Bashan. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. Indeed, his bedstead was an iron bedstead. It is not in Reba of the people of Amnon. 9 cubits is its length, and 4 cubits its width, according to the standard cubit. And this land which we possessed at that time from Aroer, which is by the river Arnon, and half the mountains of Gilead, and its cities, I gave to the Reubenites and the Gadites. The rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the kingdom of Og, I gave to half the tribe of Manasseh. All the region of Argob, with all Bashan, was called the land of the giants. Jair, the son of Manasseh, took all the region of Argob, as far as the border of Gershites, and the Maakathites, and called Bashan after his own name, Havath Jair, to this day. Also I gave Gilead to Machir, and to the Reubenites and the Gadites I gave from Gilead as far as the river Arnon, the middle of the river as the border, as far as the river Jabbok, the border of the people of Ammon. The plain also with the Jordan as the border, from Shimereth as far as the east side of the sea of Arabah, the salt sea, below the slopes of Pisgah. Then I commanded you at that time, saying, The Lord your God has given you this land to possess. All you men of valor shall cross over, armed with your brethren, the children of Israel. But your wives, your little ones, your livestock, I know that you have much livestock, shall stay in your cities which I have given you, until the Lord has given rest to your brethren as to you, and they also possess the land which the Lord your God is giving them beyond the Jordan. Then each of you may return to his possession which I have given you. And I commanded Joshua at that time, saying, Your eyes have seen all that the Lord your God has done in these two kings. So will the Lord do to all the kingdoms through which you pass. You must not fear them, for the Lord your God himself fights for you. Then I pleaded with the Lord at that time, saying, O Lord God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do anything like your works and your mighty deeds? I pray, let me cross over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, those pleasant mountains, and Lebanon. But the Lord was angry with me on your account, and would not listen to me. So the Lord said to me, Enough of that. Speak no more to me of this matter. Go up to the top of Pisgah, and lift your eyes toward the west, the north, the south, and the east. Behold it with your eyes, for you shall not cross over this Jordan. But command Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go over before this people, and he shall cause them to inherit the land which you will see. So we stayed in the valley opposite Beth Peor.
Quite a bit, right? What do you think Moses was trying to do? Nothing?
I think there's quite a bit of a rebuke here, but it's a very subtle. In a lot of ways, the rebuke is very subtle, because when he talks about how he had given the certain lands to the descendants of Esau and he gave certain lands to the descendants of Lot, one of the things he reiterates several times over when he talks about how those descendants of Abraham and of Abraham's family gained that land was basically, they conquered giants too. They didn't experience all the miracles you experienced in the Exodus.
That's the big thing, was the giants.
And yet they conquered their giants, and they possess their land. But yet you were not willing to do the same thing 40 years ago and possess the land because you were too scared of the giants. Esau and Lot's descendants were not scared of the giants, and you were. That's a pretty, it's a very subtle rebuke, but it's a very important one.
So, and that's what you get from this particular, there's a lot of stories here of how others that God has blessed. He blessed Esau, not cursed him, he blessed him. And he blessed the Lot and his two sons, blessed them by giving them strength, giving them power, giving them the endurance to be able to fight giants bigger than they, mightier than they, more powerful than they, outnumbered them, and God did what he said he's going to do. So he used external, quote, like the descendants of Abraham, but actually the descendant of Abraham's father also, had to comment that this is what I'm going to do for you. Now, this should be evidence for you to know that I have done this. I've done it to Esau. I've done it to Ammon. I've done it to Jordan, Moab. I've done it for them. And 40 years ago, you wouldn't even go in, and they weren't even that big. They weren't giants there. The giants were over on the other side of Jordan. There were no indication. There was one indication of possibility there were some giants in the Canaanite Valley. But it's kind of interesting. You look at this thing. And so Moses is telling them, okay, they're right there ready to cross over at the Jordan River. And lo and behold, now we also have a new generation, don't we though? It's a whole new young. And I remember he read there, it's the men of war that did not go into the promised land. Has nothing to do with saying the women of war. So there's a lot of old ladies probably cross the border. And keep that part in mind. Not the whole generation is wiped out. It's just the men of war. And who were the first groups of men of war who died? Do you remember? The spies. All of them died except two. Immediately, he killed them quickly. Took their lives on the spot. And so, you know, God works pretty fast on that thing. And we kind of look at these things. And we say, okay, now Moses, you've got a new generation coming up here now. And he's reminding them of the history. Now, the new generation is going to go into the land. And the other side of Jordan, we have half the tribe of Manasseh, we have Reuben, and we have Gad, are also going to join in with them to fight. And go across that Jordan River and fight, and did not return until the battle was safe for them, the rest of the Israelites, to dwell and live in that land. Which probably took, Joshua died at 110, and when that happened, it says the land was at peace. Okay, so they got to go back home by the time Joshua died. So they had the long battle. I mean, like most men of war, though, you rotate them. We already read before in the past, in the book of Numbers, where God only used 1,000 from each one of the tribes of the fighting men. So we had 12,000 men go to war. Not every male from 20 to 20 and up. But they were all, quote, required to serve in the war or required to serve in the army until they're dead. There's no retirement in the military with God. You must always be fighting. Which kind of tells us a little bit in our own personal life, right? We ourselves must continue on fighting until we are dead. Otherwise, you're worthless to God. Put it that way, in a simple language. Okay, so we're at this point. By the way, I just want to bring out a couple of minor things. In Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 1, some of your translations have that they were at the Red Sea. The word sea is not there. And this particular word does not mean the word, what we think, as being the Red Sea. It's the only place used in the entire Bible. And it's surf. And it has to do with an area where there's an awful lot of grassy area along the ocean or along the river, Jordan River, which is more of a grassy land, and that, you know, grass do grow in rivers sometimes. We have that in our own river here. So if you have that as a sea, it's not referring to the Red Sea at all. In fact, the word doesn't even mean red. It means like what we would call, best way to call it, we call it seaweed, grass that grows in water. It's not a really big thing. It's not the same as reed, as you've read there in Exodus. This is, a reed is a different word, but this is different. It's a minor thing to tell you about. And anyway, they were along this Jordan River. And one of the places I thought was interesting, it says that Dai means that which is of, or who that which is of. It's like a possession. Like we would say in our language, John's house, apostrophe S, house of John. This place here is where the gold was at. The second word is the place of gold, where there's a lot of gold. And kind of interesting that we think of California as a place where not a lot of gold was, but you know, in that area of the world, there's a lot of gold there. How many of you know that a lot of Arabs have an awful lot of gold? They build houses, they build a lot of belongings of gold. They don't take it from our Fort Knox. They have it right there in the area. You remember the back of Genesis? One of the places was where there's a lot of gold. Same word is being used here. So it's a well-known place where there was a lot of gold and a lot of gold mining. And I don't know where. It doesn't matter. Now, in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day. 40th year, in the 40th year. It's the 11th month, and this is the first day of the month. Now, at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, we realize that Moses is dead, or dies, and they wait for another, I think it's 30 days, before they entered into the promised land. They didn't enter the promised land prior to, or during the 12th, during the 40th year. They actually entered into the promised land in the beginning of the 41st year. Kind of interesting to keep that part in mind. It came to an end. The trial comes to an end. What does 40 have to do with anything? Sorry, what? Completion. Something has now come to an end. How long was Moses up in the mountain the first time? 40 days. How long was Moses up the second time? 40 days. How long did the Messiah fast? 40 days. So 40 is a very, very prominent thing with God. And it's very important that we kind of keep those things in mind. So as we look at our own personal and private life, many of you are become aware of it now. And sometimes it takes 40, quote, years for something to come to a completion. You finally realize what God really wants in your world, in your life. You know, I'm well past the age of 40. But when I was at 40 years of age, something was finally, understood something for the first time in my entire life. Had to do with the family, personal thing. And it just cleared up everything in the past. It's all over with. And I could, and it's an amazing whole new eye-opening for me at the age of 40. And I thought that was very strange, you know, at the age of 40. Yeah. And of course then being here, plus 40 plus years, walk in this direction. That is from baptism. I started at the age of 18, barely 18. But I graduated with a 19, so it was my senior year in high school that I began to look at what was the Word of God was all about, which many of you know, my family was not a religious family. My brother became religious, but it took a long time for the rest of them to catch up. So it's a story. Okay. And then he goes on, and he told the people, take some wise men of understanding. And what was their job? Sorry, what?
To judge.
Okay, and that's very, very important. And he says, and they said, that thing which you have done is good. We'll do it. We will do it. We'll find good, wise men that will help you to judge and make decisions. Now, they had to, quote, not go to yeshiva school. They just had to learn what Moses was being told by Yahweh in order that they could hear and understand the truth. But it's very interesting now in drop down to verse 17 of Deuteronomy, chapter 1, verse 17. And he says, "And you shall respect persons, you shall not respect persons in judgment." Telling these four, how many were there? Well, he says, you know, captains of hundreds, captains of thousands, captains of, so an awful lot, wasn't there, that were chosen. Okay. He says, now, "But you shall hear the small as well as the great." The important people and the unimportant people. The people who are smarter and also the people who are dumber. I'm using those words, of course, not mean that they were dumb. But you had to hear the whole case. And you couldn't just make your opinion about it before you heard the whole case. And even after you've heard the whole case, he says something else is here. "You shall not be afraid to face the face of man, for the judgment is Elohim's." So these were men who had to learn what judgment was in relationship to the Creator of heaven and earth, and what he had stated many times, the book of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and all of those things we have now are in the book of Deuteronomy, and he had to learn what those judgments were. Now, in the 40 years of traveling, I have my personal opinion. Those men must have had to work an awful lot. They just didn't sit down there and gripe and complain and bicker. Though we have times they did, not they, but others have grimed and complained and bickered, and they're handled relatively quickly by God. One was 3,000 in one day, and one was 25,000, I guess, the next time, and all of a sudden people began to, let's stop and think here for a moment. But also remember, who did they see doing it? Huh? They saw Moses doing it. They didn't see the hand of God. And we will learn a little bit more when we turn to the next chapter in 2 weeks from now, where Moses explains what's going on. So the judgments came from, and of course, the Creator of heaven and earth. And then, of course, you know, in going into the land, which she already brought out, "Do not be afraid, neither be discouraged." Well, now the evidence comes true. Now look what happened. I helped Esau, which is supposed to be the most wicked person of all of the house of and all the family of God, right? The wicked, wicked, wicked Esau. But God blessed him. So we have to be careful how we judge somebody. God blessed them. And we look at that, we say, now how does God look at that? Well, he looks at it totally different than we do. And I think it's more important that we look and see how he thinks. He says, "Do not be afraid to do and carry on where I'm going to send you." And he carried on down. He said to them about going over to the promised land and try to do the spies on there. He says, "Yahuwah," or Yahweh, or the Lord, your Elohim, "will go before you. He shall fight your enemies according to all that he did in Egypt before your eyes." Now, they didn't see God fighting the Egyptians, did they? What did they see? Somebody had a rod. Remember, there's a rod and there's a staff. A rod is something you hit with. Staff is something you lead with. And so what happened to the Egyptians every time a rod came up? Destruction. And they didn't really see God's hand. They saw Aaron's rod doing something, or saw Moses' rod doing something. And to them, they didn't see the hand or the power of God. God does not let us see what he does. And later on we'll learn, because if we actually did see, we would be so terrified that we wouldn't be able to live. We would be, in a sense, scared to death. The heart would beat so fast, my first opinion, that it give a lot of men heart attacks and maybe women heart attack to see and hear the power of God. Because it's awesome. It's always called the awesome God. Because why? He is awesome. He said, when you sent out and you pitched your place by the tents, a fire by night to show you the way you should go, and a cloud by day. Why a cloud by day? What was a cloud doing by day? It's protecting them. Covering them. Kippah. Putting a protection over them. From what? The elements of the world, and also from the very sun itself. Could be very, very devastated upon you. I mean, for 40 years, you know. You could need something to protect you from the hot sun and your camp. You need something nice and warm at night. See what you're doing at night. You have to get up in the middle of the night to do something. I didn't think it was bright like our lights here. No. But it must have been something different. And he said, now, of course now, you sent out these spies, and says, that sounded okay with me, but surely not one of these men that gave this bad report are with you. They're dead. Except for, of course, Caleb and Joshua. So he's reminding them, as we go through this, what it's all about, and then how God has been providing for them in this first chapter, showing them many, many times how God has intervened, protected and guided them, and shown them the way, what kind of judgment is, what kind of laws are, what is all that he has done for those 40 years of teaching and teaching, leading and guiding and guiding, getting them ready to enter into something called the Promised Land. Now, before we go on the next two chapters, which is really a brief one, what did God say about the land of Canaan before he sent them in there? Remember what he said? You forgot. I don't like that. I want to enter that land. I can't stand those people. I can't stand that land. By the way, I'm sending you to clean it up. And that's what they were supposed to do. The hard part sometimes is for us to say, was God a coward? Well, actually not. He wasn't a coward at all, nor did he pass the buck. What was he doing? Strengthening them. Now, for all these 40 years, they would learn what is right judgment, what righteousness is, what is holy, what is just, what is good. And during the time, they had to learn, how do I become clean? If you're unclean, this is how you become clean. If you are clean, you become unclean. This is what you got to do to get back and get clean. He goes a process of how to become and remain holy. And it's a process, by the way. It's not a one-time shot deal. Being holy is not a one-time shot deal. It's a continual process that you do for the rest of your entire life. Your work, and you'll see, you have to go to the word of Devarim Elohim, and or that you can understand just exactly what is cleanliness to him and what is unclean to him. What is holy and what is unholy. And that's why we went through such in depth on Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, to explain a little bit exactly what God looks at and says, now, yes, you are unclean. This is how you are to live, and you are to be holy as I am holy. Remember? So we have a job to do on the outside. And what happens when we start doing those things on the outside becomes a habit. And then God says, okay, now I'm going to work on the inside. And along comes the Messiah. You know, the Pharisees were good cleaning themselves on the outside. They didn't know how to clean the inside out. Not a one of them. I know you can curse them. That's beside the point. Won't do any good. But they didn't know how to clean the inside. Not even Paul knew how to clean the inside of Paul out. And so God had to say, okay, I'm going to take this. I'm going to clean this guy up. And so he had to do a lot of work, you know. And it wasn't a piece of cake for Apostle Paul. It was a hard way of going through. And in the next two chapters, first of all, it talks about Esau and how Esau gained the land of... what was the name of the people before Esau took it over? Remember? The land of Seir. S-I-E-R. Different group of people lived there. They were large, giant people. And God gave Esau his descendants, his family, the power to eliminate that group of people. They weren't friends. One time they did join for a while, but it didn't last very long. And so he overwhelmed them and took them away. And then we had the Moabites. He says, do not distress the Moabites. Why? Because I, verse 9 of chapter 2, I gave it to them. Oh, I mean God gave it to them? Yeah. I gave, by the way, the land of that was belonged to Seir unto Esau. I gave it to them. Now, sometimes in our world, we don't think God gives us anything. We think we've had to earn it. We work hard. I earn my wages. I worked hard. Worked for the man for 40 years. I earn the honor. No, you don't. God gave it. That's where Apostle Paul said, when you work, work for the Lord. Because that's the one who gives you not only the breath you have, but gives you the food. He's the one. Everything you eat, by the way, comes up from the ground. Right? Comes from the dirt. What do you eat that does not come from the dirt? I ate a bird. Well, no, the bird had to get up. What does a bird eat? What comes from the earth? It has to come from the earth. And everything comes from the earth. This planet. So God had given us just that much. Of course, we talk about the Moabites, and we talk about Ammon. Jordan, what we call today Jordan, and that land was given unto the family of Lot's kids, and they were giants. Both, when we read this here, he read it there. They're both giants in those two lands as well. So the Moabites and the Ammonites had to fight against giants, big, large, more powerful, mighty, more stronger than they. And God has sent them into. And we'll find this. I'm going to send you into a land where the people are mightier, stronger, more powerful, and greater than you are. And I want you to beat them up. Well, you know, when the odds are against you, what do you normally do? Head the other direction. That's human beings, right? You got a gang of five coming at you, the one person, what do you do? Run. The other direction, as fast as you can, get out of their way, because life will hurt you. And lo and behold, God says, no, I'll be with you. And your journey, you will pass through, and you will fulfill what I want you to do. So we have this story, and then in the third chapter, real quickly here now, in talking about, do not be afraid of these people I'm sending you in, because I did it for Esau, I did it for Ammon, I did it for Moab. So now I want you to go there and to do it. And one of the men that was so large in the other side of Jordan, remember the three tribes that fought? One man down there, and it says he had a bed of iron. He was so huge and a massive, big man, giant of a man. Not a weakling, not a, what do we call that today when someone's overweight? What's that? Huh? Obese, yeah. He wasn't obese. This guy was strong, powerful, and mighty. All of that family, or that tribe that Reuben and Manasseh and Gad fought were strong, powerful, and mighty men. They weren't tall and lanky, leading to play a good basketball court. No, these were warriors. They didn't have basketball in those days. I think basketball is an American thing. I don't know. I don't know much about sports. Anyway, and he says, I will destroy them as I have done before you. And he talks about how he gave unto Reuben and gave unto Manasseh and gave unto Gad all the things. And down in verse 31, it says, I compassed Joshua at that time, commanded Joshua, saying, thine eyes have seen all that Yahuwah, your Elohim, has done unto these two kings, meaning of the east side of Jordan. So Yahuwah will do to all the kingdoms that you pass. Do not be afraid. For Elohim is with you. All right, going back in time. When Moses was, at a very young age of, 40? He was afraid and he fled. And then, 40 years later, he saw this, bush that didn't burn, right? And, of course, he was very brave at 80 years old, right? Remember him being brave? He begged God, don't send me. Who am I? I have done no, I am nothing. I'm just a sheep herder. I know how to take care of sheep. Don't get me there. No. I came down. I found out my people are in trouble. And I'm going to come here and I'm going to deliver them from the hands of the slave owners. And by the way, so go and do it. Wait a minute. Me? Why not you? No, I've said to you. And now we look back at Moses, this particular time in his age, he's 120, or soon there'll be 120. And all of a sudden we see this incredible, strong, dynamic, unmovable man. And we all look back at him. We learn from him. We learn what Moses had to say, because why? God talked with him. And of course, the last part of this chapter, when he said, he begged God, please, let me go in. The statement was pretty short and brief, verse 26, third chapter. Last part. This is Old English here. Let it suffice thee. Speak no more unto me about this matter. Ooh. And so he never talked to God again about entering into the promised land. That was it. You could think God was a little bit upset with him. Obviously, it was there. He says, he kept asking him and wanting him. He says, that's it, no more. Shut up. We use that terminology today. Are you ready to be told by God, enough is enough? Suffice is what you have, and you're not going to get anything else. You're going to go through, and you're going to do what I want you to do. And that's it. Don't look for something that you had at one time, and I took it away. I'm not going to give it back. Pretty serious, wouldn't you think that's serious? Pretty heavy, right? He's once, but God, the very beginning, right? I will have you, Moses, lead them into the land. Very, very big of Exodus, right? Oh, okay. Why did God change his mind? Well, yes, Ellie?
Maybe he didn't change his mind. When you're playing a part in a play, and that our generation is to go back and learn from these words. When you're playing a part in a play, you don't get to pick the dialogue. So this may have been the setup from the beginning. So
you think God wrote the script?
Yeah. Okay. So what does it picture that Moses did not go? He led them to the promised land.
What is it for us to know? What are we supposed to learn from this?
Yeah.
There is no plan what? No plan B. Always one plan. Nothing has changed from that very beginning. And we went through Genesis in the very first chapter and told you in the very beginning it tells you the end. We see it plain as day in the very first chapter of the book of Genesis, or Bereshit. Everything's well planned out by God. Now, it does seem to say that we can say yes or no to it. Because that's what seems to be the conclusion of the matter. You have a right, you can say yes or you can say no. Actually, you probably could say no. Because most of us do, right? No, God, I don't want to do that. No, God, I don't want to move here. No, God, I don't sell that. No, God, I don't want to do this. No, God, I don't want to live there. No, God. But guess what? We're not all like Abraham. But remember, Abraham was 75 years old before he said, yes, I'll go. Yes.
But God's also very patient.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If you don't do it when you're 30, maybe you'll do it when you're 40.
Right, yeah.
Okay. So he's very patient.
That's
but
right,
on the other
patient.
Hand, he can also make you very uncomfortable.
There's no doubt about that. I agree with you on that all the way. Okay. That's getting warm in here now. If there's no more comments. All right. Now, we're going to get into more interesting part of... Not interesting. We're going to find out what Devarim Moshe Devarim had to say in more precise detail from chapter 4 onward. And it's pretty strong at this particular point in time. And remember, what did God say? I speak to Moses in a dream, in visions. Oh, I speak to him face to face. And I do not speak in blindness. I tell him exactly, plain and clear language, what I'm going to do. Daniel?
To me, when I read about Moses' plea and desiring to go in with the people to lead them through, to me that's no different, in my personal opinion, as Messiah. And that the Messiah's first coming, his desire is to fulfill all what God commands, which is fine. But just as Moses, all right, people, I have to leave. You have to do this on your own.
You're on your own.
God's Spirit will lead you, but you must do it on your own now without me. And even Messiah pleaded to God, take this away from me. I don't want to go through this. I wish to continue living. I wish to survive and continue on through this.
Because I have many things to tell these people.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
But that wasn't Messiah's case. It was not Moses' case. It was not God's plan. So they're both painting the picture of the Messiah will be here to lead you, but then he will leave, and you must be on your own for a period of time before he returns.